producing over 500 hours per week of talk radio. GCN Live is a world leader in talk radio. Archives for the following program can be found at GCNLive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Glenda the Good Witch?
Glenda the Good Witch.
Okay, we're going to take votes on the quality of that imitation.
When you say glowing balls of light gets out, has an interaction, gets back in and floats away, I revert back to my childhood and watching The Wizard of Oz. I mean, it was the producer's girlfriend who was probably should be on the Rotten Tomatoes worst actresses of all time list. Anyway, I'm sorry I digress here. Flying humanoid reports is something that I've had a number of reports since 2007, 2008 in Colorado of what appeared to be flying humanoids. Now, I recall from your book that there were several reports that may have been misinterpreted as that in Wonders of the Sky, but have you encountered cases that you feel are real credible? I remember the Bishop of Asgard. What was that one case where?
Bishop of Lyon in France, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's where the word Magonia comes from, of course, you know, I mean, because at that time these people believed that possibly they were being invaded by some foreign land that could send ships through the sky and they would ravage the crops, but by so doing they'd be taking the crops or the essence of the crops with them into the sky on these ships and taking them back to the mystical and unknown land of Magonia. And, I mean, there weren't any flying humanoids in that story. I normally try to distinguish between a flying humanoid, which is just a person like Superman bobbing around in the sky, and cases of humanoids that do transform into balls of light. I'm actually writing a book at this point about cases like this through history, even looking for, looking at modern examples too. I haven't got a name for the book yet, but I mean, personally, I call them something like neon phantoms because they look like ghosts when they transform. But I mean, they can be ghostly or extraterrestrial in origin or imaginary. It doesn't really matter very much. But there's so many cases like this through history. And then you also find them in modern abduction law, you know, the little gray aliens that transform into balls of light to get into a room, maybe as Santa Claus might. I don't know. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah, it's also you can make a case for an occult angle, too, because often, let's say in Mexico or in the Southwest United States where we are, flying humanoid reports often have a kind of a folkloric interpretation of being witches, being black magicians, adepts that were able to fly. I've interviewed a woman who claims her grandmother attempted to teach her this, multi-generational line of brujos. There have been cases in Mexico that actually were officially reported by law enforcement who in one case were attacked by what was described as a flying female form that attacked these guys outside their squad car. There's been some fairly good videotape taken over the years of something that appears to be a black robed humanoid figure flying around in the sky. Some pretty good daylight footage I remember from the 90s. And I've had over a dozen cases in the San Luis Valley from one part of the valley of what appears to be like a gargoyle Dracula meets aerial effect out of The Frighteners, the movie The Frighteners. It's the only way I can describe it, seen by real reliable witnesses. So I think it's worthy of a book. And wasn't it Ken Gerhard that just wrote a book on flying humanoids? It wasn't that extensive. It just concentrated on a number of cases, but surprisingly, there's been quite a number of these cases over the years, just as there's been a surprising high percentage of cases of UFOs involved with bodies of water, which a lot of people who don't have a background in this field to the extent that we do are, I think, for the most part, unaware. I mean, Ivan Sanderson in Invisible Residence made the incredible statement that he believed up to 50% of all UFO sightings are involved with bodies of water. So
in the book we mention a few cases like that too.
Yeah, I mean, well, you have the case of the Victoria. You also have the Strasbourg case.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, just to mention flying humanoids for a second again. I mean, in chapter 7, we talk about a case which I find very interesting because it's an object seen in the sky. It was in August 1829. A group of people in Leeds in England saw what they thought was the full moon, until it separated into two halves right above their heads. And then two humanoid figures came out and started floating in the sky for about an hour. So, I mean, what we did in this case was to find out whether the moon was actually full on that date or not, which would be August the 20th, 1829. And it wasn't. It wasn't full. And then we analyzed the story from every possible angle. And what we found was that there were so many other cases through history before 1947 of objects that were, well, they looked like the moon, or they resembled the sun, and they opened up. There were like people inside, or, I mean, sometimes they just talked about faces, but quite often there were like flying angelic beings that pop out of an orb flying in the sky. So these cases are interesting because, of course, this predates all UFO encounters involving flying saucers or other kinds of spaceships of the 1940s.
Why do you think it is that UFOs became so popular after World War II? Was it just the accident of the Kenneth Arnold sighting and the right conditions for publicity, even though this has been an ongoing phenomenon?
I mean, I have to look at this historically and chronologically. I mean, UFOs, the idea that alien artifacts could come from another planet and land on Earth started at the start of the 19th century. I mean, we talk about meteorites with hieroglyphics on them, or objects that contain books and papers, or even mummified aliens that came from other planets. And then we can find that from around 1847 onwards. Then after that, and during that period, people became very interested in meteors in general, because they began to realize that that meteors, meteorites, asteroids, and so on could come from other planets. So this whole theme became very popular from that point on. I mean, if you look at ancient astronauts, the theory of ancient astronauts started in 1823 in France, and it's never gone away. What people don't realize is that, you know, before von Däniken, 150 years before von Däniken, people discussed the possibility that a planet had blown up somewhere in our solar system or outside it. It rained down fragments here, some of which are actually inhabited by people. I mean, there was a guy in 1877 who said that Australia was itself an asteroid that had come from outer space, and that explains why it was populated with very strange creatures and people. And they said, well, now it's fallen into Earth territory. We can take it for ourselves, you know, finders keepers. So what I find is that it's not that UFOs became so popular after 1947. It was building up to this for a very long time. And then you go up to the 1880s, when they start to talk about actual spaceships fallen from the sky and contact with extraterrestrials. Then at the beginning of the 20th century, this continues. There were still cases of actual spaceships reported in newspapers. People found skull fragments and said, well, this probably belonged to a Martian who landed very badly, and his spaceship blew up. And then you find a lot of this all the way through the 1910s. Then what happens around sort of between 1910 and 1920, and then you have the war, people's interest, I mean, their focus changes. But at the same time, there was a huge interest in science fiction. So it sort of replaced, in a sense, the articles that had been coming out in the press in the 19th century.
Let's break it here. and we'll pursue that in more detail in our next segment. With Chris Aubeck, Gene, and KK, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
My name is Bill Bonner, and I have an important message. Right now, the highest levels of government are struggling against an inevitable crisis, but they're about to lose control. When this happens, it will rip our country apart in ways you never imagined. From where we shop to the family you want to protect. Look, I've made predictions like this before. A few years ago, I warned that the housing prices would collapse. Before that, I warned that dot-com companies would crash, and they did. Those who listened had a chance to save themselves. But this has nothing to do with the stock market. This will affect us all. I've posted a free video at disappearingdollar.com. Maybe you'll disagree with my conclusions, but first you need to watch this video and see the facts for yourself. You can watch the video for free right now by going to disappearingdollar.com. Again, that's disappearingdollar.com.
A lot of people's lives and bodies are out of balance. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops optimize pH level and get rid of harmful waste and acid. Just a few drops in water restores vibrance and energy and gets you back in balance. Now order two bottles and get $10 off your order. Sign up for monthly auto shipping and save 25%. Call 800-518-7615 or visit alkavision.com. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at alkavision.com.
This is a healthcare alert from the Pain Relief Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You don't have to suffer any longer. You can immediately qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you by calling our 24/7 Pain Relief Hotline at 866-389-0620. Delivery is free and all paperwork is handled for you. If you are on Medicare and have knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain, don't wait. You can qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost by calling our 24/7 pain hotline now at 866-389-0620. Our representatives are standing by 24/7 to take your call and rush you your pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you. Shipping is free and all paperwork is handled for you. Just call 866-389-0620. That's 866-389-0620. Again, 866-389-0620.
If you're like me, you're concerned about the stock market and the economy. You're asking the questions, but it just doesn't seem that you're getting the right answers. Well, my friends at the Wealth Preservation Institute not only have the answers, but they put together a free report, How to Survive the Upcoming Economic Collapse and Protect Your 401ks, IRA Savings, and Retirement Income. Don't hesitate. This report's for free for a limited time by calling 888-772-2929. That's 888-772-2929. Take back your financial lives today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So if you check plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com, you'll learn about our second radio show called After the Paracast, and also about getting the ad-free version of this show, complete show transcripts just starting, videos coming in a very short time. a lot more for a modest monthly, annual, five-year, or lifetime subscription rate. We also give free ebooks for long-term subscriptions. Learn all the details, plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. Our guest this week is Chris Aubeck, co-author of Return to Magonia, Investigating UFOs in History. And now we were talking about UFOs around World War I or the part of the last century. And you mentioned science fiction. I assume things like Jules Verne or stories like that, right?
Well, there's a lot more than that. I mean,
Edgar Rice Burroughs, of course.
I mean, these that practically don't even enter the UFO picture, in a sense. I mean, there was just so much science fiction generated in the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, that there are so many books that discuss disc-shaped objects, you know, published from the 1880s onwards. This whole idea that UFO, interested in alien contact or UFOs started from 1947 isn't quite true. It was just a step more in the development of a theme which had been popular at least since the beginning of the 19th century. Then after this huge increase in science fiction in the 1920s and 30s, then people began talking again about the possibility that UFOs could invade, were invading, were visiting us. Then when 1947 happened and Kenneth Arnold had his sighting, it was already there. It was already a part of culture.
Yes.
It was already a part of human or human experience or human imagination, one of the two.
There was a huge wave of activity all through the Midwest and West, especially on the West Coast, the weeks prior to the Arnold sighting in Roswell. But also you have your great airship wave that kind of pumped the waters a little bit, which many people think the pivotal Mercury Theater broadcast of the reworking of World War of the Worlds by Orson Welles, done as a kind of a mock newscast, that there was some debate over how influential that actually was at the time. But I think over time it influenced policy amongst the government officials and may have had a unintended side effect of maybe heightening the secrecy around government interest in the subject. Back in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, did you find the government taking an active interest in these claims? And how about academia, scientists, astronomers?
I haven't found any sense of a conspiracy in the 19th century. I mean, as far as I know, only one person, an Australian, well, actually Irish originally, an engineer named Fred Birmingham, said that he thought, he was a man who had a dream that, some people would say he actually had the experience itself, although it did involve floating heads and a lot of strange things like that. But anyway, he had a dream in which an airship landed next to his house. The pilot came out and showed him how to operate the machine and said, "You've got to build one." And this was a period in which people, it was the 1870s, 1860s, and it was a period when people were really trying to build the first working airship, a dirigible, because hot air balloons could not be steered very well. So he dedicated the rest of his life to designing a machine just like the one that he'd seen in his dream or in his vision. While he was doing so, I mean, because he devoted all his life to that. I mean, he spent all his money on it. He lost his job. He almost became, I think he became penniless in the end. He died in an asylum in the end, completely forgotten, and he'd been a member of Parliament, in fact. But we're talking about a man who thought that the British, particularly Queen Victoria, had something against him, and they were trying to cover up his research and to sort of belittle his attempts to build a flying machine. So he thought that there was a conspiracy against him by Queen Victoria.
He's born 100 years too soon.
That's right, yeah. I mean, today he'd be in all kinds of chat shows.
He'd be on Coast to Coast every other night.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, apart from that, no, we haven't really found any indication.
Well, I didn't so much mean a conspiracy. I just assumed that, I mean, this is so rare back then that I don't think there'd be a conspiracy. But just indications of official government investigations, official government scientists commenting on it, making measured statements, that sort of thing, maybe
quotes by astronomers. What was
there was plenty of that all the way through, because the way it works is that up till the 17th century, anyone could publish about these things. I mean, science didn't have its own journals, in a sense. I mean, science was still like public knowledge, and the gossip columns and the science columns were practically the same thing at that point. The newspapers published about anything. Then from the 18th century onwards, science publications were founded so that scientists, if they wanted to be taken seriously, wouldn't publish in popular newspapers. So from the 18th century onwards, there was a lot more interest by the establishment, by official scientists, in anything, in any kind of observation of zany meteorites that flew strangely, or natural phenomena. Then at the beginning of the 19th century, again, with this massive explosion of newspapers, the new newspaper industry, from that point, everybody, again, could publish practically whatever they wanted, because the editors were only interested in selling copies of the newspaper, so the stranger the better. And then what happened was that scientists felt quite snobbish about this, of course, so they stuck with their journals, whereas, you know, for the general population, newspapers served that purpose, to get information out there about unusual sightings of any kind. So, I mean, that's the way it worked, really.
Yeah, it sounds pretty similar to the way it works today. Just substitute newspaper with internet and TV. And
probably.
You've got a boilerplate for 200 years of head scratching and wheel spinning.
That's true.
Here's another question. This one comes from Alien Esquire, who's been a poster for for just over a year. He doesn't post much, but he always asks good questions. He comes out when we have good guests on. He has a couple of questions, and since we were talking about wartime periods, this is something that I've noticed, that at the end of major international conflicts in the 19th and 20th century, we seem to have an uptick in UFO reports, waves, if you will. And he's wondering, by your estimation, how have major world events such as World Wars I and II, or the American Civil War and the Revolutionary Wars, impacted the number and nature of historical UFO sightings? And I would include conflicts around the world in Europe, possibly in Africa or Asia. Do we see any correlations at all between conflicts, an uptick, let's say, in sightings, or possibly even a downtick?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, UFO sightings do seem to increase in wartime. We can see that from the Foo Fighters of World War II, for example.
Let's do our break here, and we'll go into UFOs in wartime. We've got Chris Aubeck with Gene and KK. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, Berkey Guy here. Are you still drinking unfiltered tap water? Does your water contain chlorine or fluoride? Will you have drinkable water in an emergency? The Berkey Guy is here to help you remove these and other potential contaminants from your water, thus helping you drink clean, purified water. We offer Berkey water purification systems at the lowest available prices online. Don't go another moment without Berkey system. Over the last 10 years, we've helped thousands drink clean, purified water. Join them by visiting goberkey.com or call me, the Berkey Guy, at 877-886-3653. That's 877-886-3653.
Hi, I'm Rick Osick with Famous Footwear. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies? And that's why we support the March of Dimes in the fight against premature birth. Join us in supporting cutting-edge research, treatment programs, and outreach to help moms have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Learn how you can help save babies' lives at marchofdimes.org.
Did you know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of only the most alkaline minerals. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins, and helps you regain health and energy. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps
the body rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen content, and raises the pH of your body to healthy levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
I want to be able to smoke inside, cut down on cigarettes, jog without wheezing, be kissable, and save money.
Then you want LeSig e-cigarettes. Get the highest quality, best tasting vaping experience on the market with unmatched customer service from LeSig. And right now, gobble up this deal. Buy $30 worth of any products and get a starter kit for only $5. Use code SK at checkout. But hurry, offer good only until Thanksgiving at LeSig.com. LeSig.com. Kick some ash with LeSig.
Sciatica, lower back pain, hip pain, poor posture. If you suffer from any of these problems, get ready to relax. Introducing an amazing product that's been in the market for over 25 years, the Sacro Wedgie. It was invented by a football coach using a common sense osteopath technique. He created this device to help his athletes by isolating and supporting the sacrum, which is the keystone of our anatomy. This wedge-shaped bone is in the center of our hips, where a lot of pain starts. Simply relax 20 minutes daily on the amazingly simple Sacro Wedgie and let gravity do the work, helping muscles rebalance and start releasing nerves. Sit in the Sacro Wedgie at the computer or while traveling to help correct posture to finally help relieve those stubborn aches and pains for only $33.95. It's made in the USA, so click the family-owned website at sacrowedgie.com, spelled S-A-C-R-O-W-E-D-G-Y.com, or call 1-800-737-9295. That's 1-800-737-9295. Relax your back pain away with the Sacro Wedgie.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hi, this is James Fox from Chasing UFOs. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
UFOs in wartime. Why? Is it because the phenomenon is observing us, Chris Hobbeck? What do you think?
Well, you know, I think this is mainly because in wartime, people spend more time watching the skies. There's a heightened awareness of attack from the air. You can see that because in previous centuries, when UFOs were also spotted on a regular basis, there wasn't this massive increase in sightings because nobody expected to be attacked from the sky. I mean, during the airship wave of 1896, 1897, there was a massive amount of new UFO sightings, but it wasn't all about airships. People were observing the sky for the first time. Venus, Mars, and so on were also giving way to this new wave of UFO sightings. So it's because people become extremely aware of what's going on above their heads. On the other hand, what we do find in ancient descriptions of warfare, anecdotes about visions of angels, ghosts, or God, or writing floating in the clouds, almost always as propaganda. To illustrate what I mean about heightened awareness of the sky during wartime, I found a lot of stories about soldiers opening fire on enemy planes and discovering later they were shooting at Venus or Jupiter, because they were just so fixated on any lights appearing above their heads. So I'm really not surprised that there is this increase in UFO sightings, you know, during the war. I mean, just the other day, actually, I found a case in a newspaper from 1916. It says, the planet, Jupiter, being unusually bright one evening recently, some of the German soldiers fired at it, thinking it was the light of a Russian airship. Okay, that's from a newspaper published on April the 10th, 1916. Then I also found in this book from 1858 that the Turkish soldiers one morning were all woken up because someone thought that someone had sent up a rocket. In fact, it was just Venus. But they woke up all the soldiers so they could get ready for an attack, and it was just Venus in the sky. So I think it's because there's a heightened awareness of the sky during wartime.
Makes sense. Also, it tends to be towards the end of major conflicts that the sightings start to pick up in earnest. A good example would be the Foo Fighters and the Ghost Rockets. Also, the great wave of 73 is when we were starting to ship a lot of our guys back from Southeast Asia. I've also noticed in this country, it's the year preceding a change in the Democratic to Republican or vice versa in the executive branch. I've found that there seems to be a correlation there as well.
What kind of correlation?
Huh?
What kind of correlation?
There just seems to be an uptick in sightings before a change in power in the executive branch of the U.S. government.
You know, I'm writing a book in which I'm talking about the development of ufology from the 19th century to 1947. And I discovered, because I was trying to work out a way to structure the book, because I mean, it's such a chaos, there's so many cases. And then I realized that it all divides itself into these convenient 50-year period blocks. Because the first case of an object that was supposedly artificially manufactured that fell from the sky in Arkansas was 1847. So it started from there. And then 1897, of course, is when the great airship wave really began, when they started talking about spaceships arriving on Earth.
In 1947.
Years later, yeah, you got 1947. So, I mean, that's how the book divided itself. So whether it's just coincidence or not, I'm not sure.
But one thing I do really appreciate in your approach is using a timeline format, trying to lay things out, you know, as best you can chronologically. I've always done that with my writing, and I do find that it makes it easier for a reader to progress along through the information, going step by step through time instead of jumping around. Books that jump around to different, you know, types of cases are more confusing to me. I guess I like things laid out in the manner that that you do, and I do as well. But here's another interesting question from Alien Esquire. And again, we have kind of touched on this a little bit, but he's wondering, what influence, if any, do you believe religion has played in both the reporting and the evaluation of historical UFO sightings? For instance, have you considered the influence of religion in determining the veracity of a claim in order to avoid confusion with religious folklore?
Well, you know, I mean, religion is an extremely important factor, because the worldview of any individual has an impact on how he or she interprets what they see. For example, when I see a rainbow, I see a meteorological phenomenon caused by light and water droplets. But someone else might see God's promise not to bring on another deluge. I mean, the paths of religion, extraterrestrials, and UFOs intersect at various points.
Yeah, so when you see a rainbow, you don't think leprechauns and chests of gold?
No, I think, where's my camera? And I never get there on time. And it fades away. But still, you know, I mean, the thing is, the existence of a plurality of inhabited worlds was hotly debated by theologians for several hundred years, all the way through to the 18th and 19th century, when we find religious leaders discussing not only whether other planets are populated, but also the possibility that the Earth will receive visits from them. You know, I mean, we find this in, from Swedenborg to up to the Mormons and the Seventh-day Adventists and so on. So it's important not to take sightings out of context, but instead work within that context. I've seen some excellent UFO-like stories in religious texts that I would never label as UFOs after I've examined the socio-cultural environment that they came from. Even in Wonders in the Sky, where at the moment we're revising that book and we're removing things, moving things around, correcting mistakes and so on. And there are cases there which I've said, no, I think we should remove them, because they're from a religious tradition, to understand what they saw, we would need to go back to the roots of this tradition. And you know, it's like the Vimanas. It's like any mythological object in the sky is not necessarily a UFO. It's not always good enough for a UFO book. So I think it's very important to take religion into account.
Yeah. Well, where do you come down on the ancient astronaut context of David Hatcher Childress, von Däniken, Tsukalo saying things like Vimanas were actual physical craft. This was a level of technology that had already been attained by humans. These were actually people flying around, getting in aerial fights, that this should be taken literally, not interpreted and filtered through some sort of religious sort of, you know, phraseology and filtering.
Well, you know, I mean, we know that the Vimanas, they existed as a mythological idea, a very ancient one, but practically everything that's been published about them isn't true, really. I mean, most of the information comes from this early 20th century text, written in Sanskrit, the Vaimanika Shastra. But it's not an ancient book. It was channeled by someone early in the 20th century. So practically every time someone talks about Vimanas, they refer to this book as if it was authentically ancient, and it's not. But, you know, I mean, I look at this again as a kind of continuous evolution of an idea. As I said before, the ancient astronaut theory was born really in 1823 in France, but you can actually find very similar ideas from before that, going back to the 17th century.
Let's go into ancient astronauts and a lot more with Chris Aubeck, co-author of Return to Magonia, Investigating UFOs in History, Learning the Lessons from History, Perhaps, we hope. With Gene and KK, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Just recently, we've witnessed some of the most catastrophic disasters in history. Be sure to prepare yourself with great-tasting, high-quality, GMO-free food that has a 25-year shelf life. Of course, we're talking about the foods from SurvivalFoodAlliance.com. And don't forget, the human body needs up to 3 quarts of water every day to remain healthy and hydrated. So check out our water bricks at SurvivalFoodAlliance.com. Go to SurvivalFoodAlliance.com or call 877-223-1776.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lungs. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Quick reminder to please visit plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com, where you can learn about our premium features such as After the Paracast podcast, available exclusively to Paracast Plus subscribers, the ad-free version of this show. We're starting to include full show transcripts. We've got a couple up there of special episodes through the years. More to come, videos coming, a lot more. Check out our rates for monthly, annual, five-year lifetime subscriptions, free ebooks for long-term subscriptions, plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. So, talking of ancient astronauts, the modern vernacular of that, Chris Aubeck, is that we were visited by beings that were ETs, but interpreted possibly as gods in the early years because that was the cultural reference. So how far back can we take ancient astronauts?
Well, pretty far, really. I mean, there was this Austrian missionary called Martin Dobrizole, in the 18th century, who said he had no idea how the American continent had been populated. I mean, the South American continent. He said that the jungle was teeming with human life, but there was no way it could ever have got there. And he said, well, maybe it came from the moon. You know, maybe they just jumped down from the moon. I mean, this book was published in 1822, but even before that, there are sort of clues that people were speculating along the same way. I mean, there was a bishop, Francis Godwin, the bishop of Hereford, who was born in 1562. He wrote a book called The Man in the Moon, in which he said that there are no sinners living on the moon because the inhabitants of the moon threw them down every time, whenever they found a baby that a very difficult baby that wouldn't stop crying, for example, and they would land in North America where they would become Red Indians. You know, so there was a lot of that going on. Then after that, in 1823, a French guy called François Chabrier published a book in which he said that there was probably a planet orbiting between Mars and Jupiter, which had been inhabited by all kinds of flora and fauna and a race of intelligent beings. And this planet was destroyed by a comet or some kind of volcano, and then all the debris spread across the solar system, and the chunks that fell on Earth caused Noah's flood and most of the mountains, and it left the landscape sort of full of strange stones and fossils and artifacts of intelligent design, which included giant iron helmets and so on. So all of this idea was very old. And then after him, there was another French guy called Jacques Boucher, and he in 1841 said that the Earth could have the same fate. If Earth was destroyed, parts of our civilization could also end up on another planet. I mean, there's a lot of speculation of this kind. So, actually, 2 months ago, I published a book in Spanish called Uparts, and I'm thinking about writing another one in English now with a friend of mine who's a professor of history from the Complutense University in Madrid. And the book's done okay here in Spanish. And basically, we're looking at all the evidence of uparts and ancient artifacts that seem to be from a more advanced culture than our own, which have been reported probably since the, you know, from the 19th century onwards, because really the whole subject of uparts started in the 19th century.
Yeah. Uparts, by the way, for new listeners, is an acronym for out-of-place artifacts.
That's right, yeah, coined by Ivan T. Sanderson, in fact.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. One of my favorite books is Forbidden Archaeology, which is about a 1,000-page book filled with uparts.
Yeah.
Some of them are just right. Totally inexplicable. Give us an example of some of your favorites.
You know, what we do, the first chapter of this book, which, as I said, is only available in Spanish at the moment, we look at classical uparts, that is the geological ones, those that are found in pieces of coal or rock, where you can find a necklace or a hammer, a nail, coins, this kind of thing. Unfortunately, practically all of those have disappeared over time, or they never existed, who knows. But then, you know, at the beginning of the 20th century, people started collecting them again to show that possibly our ancestors were more advanced than we thought they were. And then, of course, these days, these artifacts are used by a lot of creationists for their own theories. I mean, to give you one case is very difficult, but, you know, the general idea of uparts is that it's advanced tools and things found in geological strata. You know, it's a very interesting subject to study. But then there are modern uparts in a sense, or more modern ones. There was this a kind of goblet, which I think it was from the 1600s or 1600s, which has an unusual glass. Sort of the walls of this goblet are made of glass, and depending on the angle of the light, it can be red or green. It can look completely different. And now scientists have examined this glass and said they have no idea how it was made because it's a kind of nanotechnology. It contains particles of glass and sand, which they have no idea how it was made, but it's incredible. And I mean, there's a university who's actually trying to build a series of screens, like computer screens, using this 18th century or 17th century, I think it was, technology. I mean, the whole topic of uparts is massive.
Yeah.
Because it just became such a popular subject back in the 1970s. But really, 100 years before and 150 years before, it was already quite popular.
Now, this is used as ammunition by people like Eric von Däniken to claim that E.T. visited us over the years, and that's the reason for these unusual artifacts. Mm. What do you see as an explanation? Do you have any ideas why we're seeing this? Are these just anomalies or an imaginative toy? What?
Well, I can tell you what I find. It might not be the most popular answer that you're going to get on this show, but the thing is, in the 19th century, there was this competition between America, that is the New World, and the Old World of Europe, to find the biggest dinosaur fossils, and to say our ancestors were better than your ancestors, and so on. In America, they invented the idea of the mound builders to explain how it was possible that monuments and big earth structures could possibly exist in the Americas if the North American Indians were so primitive and seemed so backward and so on. It couldn't have been them who made these structures. And they used this as an excuse, in a sense, to take the lands from them, because by saying that the current inhabitants...
Yeah, you couldn't build that. Give that to us.
Exactly, well, yeah. And they were saying...
Well, have you read this article that came out about 3 days ago, where they have now officially announced that the foundational level, the actual earliest level of famous snake mound in the Midwest, I think in Ohio, is actually 55,000 years old.
Wow, that's incredible.
Now, this is big news. This just broke a couple of days ago. Of course, we're going to be broadcasting this on Sunday, so it would have been the beginning of the prior week here. They've now determined through carbon-14 dating of charcoal and other things, the organic material, that the original mound it's been added onto and changed its configuration a little bit, but it's 55,000 years old.
That's interesting. I mean, in the 19th century, they came up with the theory that it had been a race, an advanced race who disappeared at some point, the mound builders. But, I mean, because of this competition between North America and Europe, they were constantly trying to sort of better each other. And that was when, in North America, it became very popular to say, well, we found these Egyptian tablets. Oh, we've got these Sumerian, I don't know, these Sumerian seals or something like that. And the Europeans said, well, you know, we have our Greeks, our in Rome, and we have, you know, in Athens, all these...
Piltdown man.
Yeah, so...
With a Cardiff Giant in New York.
Well, of course. I mean, all these fakes suddenly came out of nowhere. So what was happening in that period was that discovering new things in the earth became a very fashionable pastime, and they also sold newspapers, because in a sense what they were doing was saying, well, North America did have a golden age, did have its golden age, and, you know, just like Europe, so don't belittle us anymore. And it was in this atmosphere that that the whole idea of upparts really started up. So at the time, though, when people, because normally the people who wrote these articles for newspapers saying, you know, where Mrs. Smith's found a gold ring inside a lump of coal, they weren't very aware of the meaning of that. They weren't really aware of the significance of finding something in a lump of coal.
You know what? We're going to get a lump of coal from our sponsors if we don't break. Chris Aubeck with Gene and Chris, or Gene and KK. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.